This blessedness, that's what Paul has been writing about as he writes to the Romans, and that which a person has when they've been justified by faith, this blessedness. And it's the blessedness that David wrote about in verse 6, even as David also describeth the blessedness of the man unto whom God imputeth righteousness without works. Now that's the first beatitude that comes to the man who is justified by faith. He is righteous, and it's a righteousness that God has imputed without works. The second beatitude in verse 7, blessed are they whose iniquities are forgiven. Number 3, blessed are those whose sins are covered. And then number 4, blessed is the man to whom the Lord will not impute sin. So the blessedness is this: by faith, without works, we believe God and trust in Jesus Christ. And because of this, God imputes to us righteousness, His righteousness. Then God forgives our sins. God covers our sins. And then He will not, negative, will not impute unto us sin. Now those are the four beatitudes of salvation by grace. This blessedness. Paul has some questions to answer now that he has made these statements, such as, on whom does this blessedness come? How is it reckoned? And what is its sign? This blessedness, on whom may it come? Does it come on the circumcised? Let's look at verse 9. Cometh this blessedness then upon the circumcision only? The answer is no, it doesn't come on the circumcision only. How does this happiness come to the Jews only? Does it come to the heathen? And the question is asked, or these questions are asked, on whom does this blessedness come? Because Paul said, we say, in verse 9, that faith was reckoned to Abraham for righteousness. And he's saying, since we have said that this faith comes or came to Abraham when he believed, then can this kind of blessedness come to the Gentile also? And of course, this is the answer that Paul intends to give, or the question that he intends to answer. Verse 10, under what circumstances did it come to Abraham? That is, how was it reckoned? And the date or circumstance of separation is the circumcision of Abraham. When was Abraham made righteous in the sight of God? When was it reckoned unto him? Before or after circumcision? So circumcision is the dividing thing. It's that which has separated Abraham's life. Everything before circumcision, everything after circumcision. So when was Abraham made righteous? Before or after? It's sort of like our baptism. When were we saved? Before our baptism, or during or after our baptism? This is the kind of question that Paul is attempting to answer. Look at verse 10. How was it then reckoned? When he was in circumcision or in uncircumcision? Now he answers, not in circumcision, but in uncircumcision. This simply tells us that Abraham was made righteous, totally, completely, 100% righteous in the sight of God when God accounted or imputed to him righteousness. And this was done before circumcision. His circumcision then was a sign that he possessed this blessedness. Let's look at verse 11. And he received the sign of circumcision, a seal of the righteousness of the faith which he had, yet being uncircumcised. It followed after. That is, circumcision came after his salvation, after his being pronounced righteous. The word sign means a sign by which anything is designated, distinguished, or identified. And then there's the word seal, that which authenticates. And here's the sense of that statement. Notice there is the word sign and there is the word seal. And I think this will help us to understand what Paul meant. And he, that is Abraham, was afterward given the mark of circumcision as a stamp of God's acknowledgement of the righteousness he had before he was circumcised. Now let me repeat that. And he, that's Abraham, was afterward given the mark, that is circumcision, as a stamp of God's acknowledgement that he, that is Abraham, was righteous, and this righteousness was before circumcision. Now this sign was for the uncircumcised, that he, that is Abraham, might be the father of all them that believe, though they be not circumcised, that righteousness might be imputed unto them also. Now what did this circumstance mean? That is, Abraham was made righteous before he was circumcised. Circumcision was a stamp of God's acknowledgement that he was righteous. And all of this before circumcision. Well, it happened as an illustration. It happened so that God could prove that all men may have the righteousness of God, whether Jew or Gentile, since Abraham had the righteousness of God before circumcision. Abraham was saved before circumcision. This means that we who are not Jews may have these blessings, that is, this blessedness imputed to us. Verse 12. And the father of circumcision, to whom are not of the circumcision, to them who are not of the circumcision only, but who also walk in the steps of that faith of our father Abraham, which he had, being yet uncircumcised. Now notice, Abraham's faith was before circumcision, and this made him the father of all who walk in his steps. Now that needs a little explanation. He is the father of circumcision to those who are merely not circumcised, but who walk in the steps of that faith. Now the word walk is a very descriptive term. It doesn't mean to just wander around any way you want to. But it means, well, it comes from a very well-known military term, and it means strictly to march in file, to stay in rank. And the word steps, of course, means footsteps or track. Now, here's the idea. Abraham marched in a specified track. That specified track that he marched in was faith and belief. And everyone who marches following Abraham in that track And who walks in that same track in the very footsteps of Abraham, then they possess the very same kind of righteousness that Abraham possessed. But we can't walk out here in some other way or some other field or some other place. We can't wander around any way we want to. If we're going to have the righteousness which comes by faith, and we're going to have this blessedness, it means we're going to get on the track of faith and belief and stay in it just like Abraham did. And then these four great beatitudes of salvation by grace will be ours. And when I say ours to enjoy, I mean that. Ours to enjoy, and I mean by that ours to enjoy, ours to take joy from and to rejoice in. You say, what, preacher, should we rejoice in our salvation? Absolutely. Rejoice in your salvation. You're not going to ruin it. Rejoice in it. Feel good in it. Thank God for it. You're not going to hurt it. God's not going to take it away from you just because you feel good in it. Lay back in it. You know, sometimes summertime after crops are sort of laid by and we could get away from the hot fields and the hot house and all the other things that were hot in Arkansas in July and August, and get to the river and just lay back in it and just in that cool water and just rest in it and just enjoy it. Well, that's the way I want you to feel about your salvation and about what God's done for you and what God's doing for you. Just lay back in it and rest in it and enjoy it and glory in it. What? In salvation by grace that God has given you because you had faith and believed and received what God had to offer. Do not be embarrassed. It's not gloating. It's not glorying when you glory in the Lord. It's only gloating and glorying when you do it about what you've done. You'll never brag on God too much. Now, anything you do that you brag on is too much. Just the least little bit is too much. But you can't brag on and glory in and boast of what God has done for His people. Be sure and give Him thanks. Now, God's promise concerning this blessedness was based on faith, not on the law. For the promise that he should be the heir of the world, this verse 13, was not to Abraham or to his seed through the law, but through the righteousness of faith. God promised Abraham that through him all of the nations of the world would be blessed. The word promise means a declaration made on account of something. Now, God declared because Abraham did. And that is because Abraham had faith. And based on Abraham's faith, God proclaimed that he would make him the progenitor of the faithful, and that through his seed, not seeds plural, we'll be studying this, and that word seed evidently refers to Christ, all the nations, ethnic groups of the earth or world would be blessed. This term, heir of the world, is not found in the Abrahamic covenant from the viewpoint of its literally being taken from that covenant, but it means one who has a portion, he who has the inheritance. And I think Paul is referring to the 1,000-year millennial kingdom, that he has this in mind. When God's people, the heirs of promise, those who are of faith, live on this earth, and God is their God, and they are his people. The promise to Abraham and his seed that he should inherit the world came not by law, but because of justification by faith. This blessedness must be by faith, for it cannot come by law. Look at verses 14 and 15. For if they which are of the law be heirs, faith is made void, and the promise made of none effect. For if they which are of the law be heirs, that is, if we are heirs of God, sons of God by the law, then faith is voided. That's his idea. And this word means to empty. And it comes about as a result of something emptying a particular vessel or container. So what Paul is saying is, if we're justified and if this blessedness comes by the law, then it empties and makes without effect the faith that God insists that we possess. Of none effect means to render inoperative or useless. So faith is useless if we're saved by keeping the law. But we're not saved by keeping the law. And here's the reason. Because the law worketh wrath. And again, we get a compound word here, which really strengthened the word that we get energy from. It means to work down. And so it literally means by work to, shall we say, drive to one's knees. Because the law worketh, it drives us to and is the result of and comes and brings as a result of our works wrath. Because the law works down wrath. And this word wrath means punishment or revenge. Look, I can't think of a single law that rewards you for keeping that law. If the speed limit is 30 miles an hour, and it is inside the city limits of Little Rock unless otherwise posted, if you drive 30 miles an hour for, we'll say, a week, drive downtown to the police court's building and go in and tell them you want your reward. Said, now I've kept the law for a week, I've observed the speed limit, and I've not driven over 30 miles an hour, I want my reward. What will they give you? Well, they won't give you what you're looking for, I don't think, because there's not a reward for it. But if you break that law, there's punishment. We can't pass laws that give life. We can pass laws that give death. Well, we used to could. It takes about 25 years now, but we hadn't, you know, we can't even put a self-confessed murderer to death. But if the law was allowed to work, it'd work his death. And he'd been dead a long time ago. So would about a lot of other people on death row. Because what? Law works wrath. It works punishment. That's laws bring about punishment. And that's their purpose. And their reason is to punish the guilty. And so Paul is saying that this blessedness, these four things that I've written about, they don't come because you keep the law. Because law doesn't bring freedom from sin. Law doesn't bring the covering of our sins. Law doesn't bring imputed righteousness. Law doesn't bring about a state in which God doesn't impute sin. Law doesn't do that. Law, the one result of law and purpose of law and effect of law is to punish the guilty and to punish the lawbreaker. That's it. In fact, Paul asked in another book of the Bible, if there had been a law given, he makes the statement, which could have given life, verily righteousness should have been by the law. It just doesn't work that way. Notice what he writes then. For by the law, or rather for where no law is, there's no transgression. If you were on one of the autobahns in Germany, you couldn't break the speed limit. You could drive 150 miles an hour. You would not break the speed limit. You know why? There isn't one. Where there is no law, then there is no transgression. Because law, or by the law, is the knowledge of sin. The word transgression means a stepping aside as from what is right. For where no law exists, no breach of it is possible. So this blessedness, how did it come about? Well, it comes about by faith. On whom may it come? On anyone, Jew or Gentile, who has faith. Well, do we have to keep the law in order to have it? No, it's the law that punishes us because of our sins and our transgressions and our iniquities. It's the law that tells us that we've fallen short of the glory of God. So, this blessedness, on whom does it come? It comes on Jew and Gentile who'll have faith in, trust, and believe what God has said about Himself and about His Son, Jesus Christ, about His plan of salvation. If you will get in the track, if you'll get in the marchers, the stream of marchers that's marched in the track of faith, then you'll have this blessedness. Our musicians will come, and as we stand, we'll have a verse of invitation. There may be some here this evening who are not saved, and you'd like to come and trust the Lord and possess this blessedness. If that's true, you come.